G'day everyone and welcome back to the Hardball Gets AFL show. Today it's the Monday Mad Scramble as we wrap up the weekend of semi-final action and look ahead to the prelims. We're here thanks to the Mazda BT50. It's the complete package inside and out. Drive the brand new Mazda BT50 at your Mazda dealer today. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us and check back in on Tuesday for the Loose Ballers with Zave and Dill. But for now, let's get into the show. Well, we're down to just four teams, the best four teams all year, as we look to crown a premier in this crazy season. Welcome back to the Monday Mad Scramble. My name's Chris Robinson, and I'm thrilled to be joined by a guest who knows all about standing up and delivering the goods at this time of year. He's a West Coast Eagles great, the 2006 Norm Smith medalist, and you will have no doubt heard some of his silky work on Triple M Radio. He is Mr. Andrew Embley. Thanks so much for coming on, and welcome, Embers.
Yeah, g'day, lads. No worries at all.
How'd you see the first, or the second, I should say, weekend of finals? It didn't quite have the action-packed element of the first week of finals, all those thrillers that we got. But as I said, we did get the best four teams. Do you sort of like that? Would you have liked to have seen an intruder go through, or are you happy with the best four teams being the final four standing?
I think I'm happy with it. Obviously, as you said, that first week of finals was as good as any football that we've seen all year. It was terrific, four great games. And whilst we didn't hit those heights on the weekend just gone, I think there's a reason why teams finish in the top four, because over the course of the season, they've been the most consistent. So we're certainly seeing the best four teams, in my opinion, play off this weekend in a preliminary final, which I think is really great.
Absolutely. Mate, before we get a little bit more into detail of the weekend's games, I wanted to ask you, we're seeing a pattern with the Norm Smith medalists and the guys who are presenting the medal on grand final day. We had Simon Black last year who won it in 2003. This year we've got 2004 winner Byron Pickett. By my maths, that says that Juddy does it next year and you do it in 2022. Do you have any sort of knowledge of that potentially happening, and how excited are you by that potential prospect in a couple of years' time?
Yeah, listen, it'd be a really proud moment, I think, to do it. I've sort of kept a little bit of an eye on it and understand what happens with previous winners presenting the Norm Smith to the current one. So I know that Nathan Buckley, though, did pull out, was it last year? So there's a potential chance that Nathan Buckley could get thrown in. I think Simon Black did that. So I know that, obviously, I was after Chris Judd in 2005. So, yeah, definitely in 2 years' time, if Nathan Buckley doesn't jump in, if not, it'll be the year after. So Melbourne's always a wonderful week, grand final week. It's a great place at the best of times. So I'm always over there anyway, and yeah, it's going to be a really proud moment, I think, to be able to present the Norm Smith medal whenever that opportunity arises.
Fantastic. Mate, I'm sure you get asked about your Norm Smith winning game plenty of times at this time of year, every year. I'm sort of curious to know, as far as your best individual games across your career, given the circumstances, given the obviously the enormity of the occasion, do you rate that as your best individual game? Is there another game that sticks out in your mind, or is that sort of the high watermark when you look back at best games of your career?
Yeah, I don't, when I look at it, like the stats weren't like unbelievable. I think I had 26 and kicked a couple of goals, and there was plenty of games through my career where I had those sort of numbers. But I think to be able to stand up and play well in a really important and tough game of football. And yep, I did have Sean Dempster going pretty close with me. So it wasn't like I was just getting a free rein to be able to go and do what I wanted. And, you know, I think over my career, I think Dempster got me most times. So to be able to at least get him on that particular day was good. So, yeah, as I said, like I had, you know, days where I had 30 and 4, et cetera. But when you actually sort of weigh it all up, and it's on the back of the disappointment that we had in 2005, it's certainly a game that, you know, I'm not the guy to reflect too much on my footy career and think about it too much, but if I do sort of have a think about it, it's normally around September time, and the game that you recall, I guess, more than any is the 2006 AFL Grand Final.
Absolutely. Did you, how confident were you that Dempster was going to come to you at the first bounce there?
Well, I was really confident, but then in saying that, I actually started with T. Richards Ford, so that was a little bit of a surprise, because I'd had Dempster pretty much for the 2 years before that. Yep. And and I was expecting him to come to me. So I was a little bit surprised early on that they went with Teddy Richards.
Teddy, yeah.
That's right. And then I started a little bit slow, but started to get hold of it a little bit. And then really early in the second quarter, Paul Roos made the change and sent Dempster to me. And then obviously I had to sort of piggyback him around for the next sort of three quarters. So that was, whilst I was able to get hold of him, it was certainly a tough matchup.
Yeah, as far as putting that one aside and looking at the rest of your career, maybe you're just your home and away career. There's a game that sticks out to me as sort of the quintessential Andrew Embley game. Obviously, not as high stakes as the grand finals, we said. I'm curious to know if it's the same one as you or one of the ones that you might be thinking of. Is there a game that stands out to you that you look back at and go, hey, I was pretty handy that day.
There was probably a game, I think, maybe in 2009 against the Western Bulldogs.
Okay.
I don't know if this is the game that you were thinking, but...
it's not, but go on.
Yeah, we were having a pretty poor season. The Dogs were going really well and no one gave us a chance. I remember running on the ground before the game and up on the scoreboard, it had the odds. And we were paying $13 to knock them off. Like, it was just ridiculous. And I remember looking at it just going... You know what? Even at $13, I don't reckon you take it for the moment. Like, we were going so poor. And anyway, end up, I think, sort of having a really good game. We knocked them off. I think I had 30 odd and kicked four in this particular game. Yep. And I think we knocked them off by less than a kick. It was a great game. And the Dogs went on to play in a prelim that year. And I think we finished, you know, really towards the bottom of the ladder. Didn't have many wins. So that was a game that stands out. But what was the game for you?
I'm just, before I get to mine, I'm just looking at, I've brought that game up. Yeah, 32 touches, four goals from you. You guys kicked the first nine of the game. You had two of those.
So you go.
Absolutely punched him in the mouth early and then were able to hang on.
Hold on, yeah.
And win by five. Yeah, decent game. I'm thinking of one before the premiership win. I'm thinking of the Collingwood one from 2003. Over at Docklands. So this is sort of one of my more memorable Eagles games. It was Saturday afternoon. You guys jumped Collingwood at the start and then they sort of pegged you back and looked like they were going to absolutely overrun you. I think they got sort of three goals up in the last quarter and then you guys somehow got off the canvas. I think you kicked a couple late. Your numbers from that day, similar to that Bulldogs game, 25 touches, four goals, seven inside 50s and six clearances, if you don't mind, and an iconic snap at the end there. Does that one sort of rank on the Mount Rushmore for you?
Yeah, I remember that game. No, that was a good game because we didn't really have a great record in Melbourne at a particular time. 2003, we started to get things going a bit, but just before that, we really struggled as a side. We went through a bit of a transition period and we lost, you know, obviously all the guys from sort of 92 and 94, and suddenly we had this young group. And as you know, young kids take a while to mature, and whilst you win, you know, your fair share of games at home, you really struggle to win on the road. So that was probably, without doubt, my best win on the road. And as you said, was able to hit the scoreboard that particular game. And, yeah, that last snap that I did was one of the biggest flukes. Probably one of the best flukes. I somehow got it and threw on the boot over my shoulder and from the boundary line and in the context of the game. And the fact that it wasn't long to go, it was a miracle goal. And glad it went through.
Miracle goal and a miracle win. Mate, I'm glad you mentioned that sort of transition element. I wanted to ask you a bit of the dialogue about West Coast as they sit now. Is the potential, you know, looking forward to what happens with so many key players on that list now, sort of 29, 30, moving into their early 30s, and what it looks like going forward. Your Eagles career spanning from 99 to 2013, you sort of saw, well, the end of a couple of years really, that transition from that really successful 90s team when guys like McKenna and Kemp and Matera and Jakovic were just starting to get to the end of their career. And then obviously the drop-off after the end of 07 when Jarden Cousins left, but also quickly followed by really important guys like Braun and Rowan Jones and Chad Fletcher. There's plenty of guys still at West Coast, at the club, from a front office point of view that have been through that entire span. What kind of lessons do you think that they'll take from those eras sort of wrapping up and then going into a new era? What do you think they'll have learning-wise as they look to the next sort of two or three years with regard to how to handle this this transition?
Well, every club goes through this. You get a window of about maybe 3 or 4 years, and in that window, some clubs are good enough to be able to play in grand finals, win premierships. Other clubs will play in some prelims and not be able to take that next step. Yep. So West Coast has certainly been around the place since about sort of 2017, and I still think they've probably got one more year to go, and I think their best is good enough. But we've just seen the importance, especially here in WA, of being able to find a way to finish in the top four.
And, yeah, yep.
No longer now can you go for a top eight spot, because you're just not going to win a premiership from outside the top four. Here in WA, it's just too much travel, and it's just really difficult to be done. So West Coast got to find a way to finish in that top four, and then if they can do that, then they're obviously a chance to be able to play in a premiership. They're at a stage now where I think their senior players have been around for a long time. They've been around at the start, although at their beginning, when I guess, you know, sort of that mid-2000s, when we had that great premiership success. And one thing it's really important is that the older guys, you know, get around the young guys, because they are the future of the football club. And this is what the leaders of the West Coast Eagles will be doing now. You know, from a selfish perspective, they'd be really keen to win one more flag, but they need the young kids to be able to step up. They need young kids to take more responsibility. And whilst you can't put too much pressure on these kids in their first, second, third year, the importance of giving them games, working really hard with them off the field, because you know, Shuey needs you know Duggan, he needs Nelson, he needs, you know, these kind of guys to be able to really stand up and take their game to another level. Because whilst, you know, Shuey's been an absolute gun, while Kennedy's been a gun, Hearn, they can't do it on their own anymore. And so that's why, you know, getting around these guys, having a really good culture, building strong relationships. You know, West Coast have always built an environment where, regardless of how many games you played, you know, everyone has an equal voice. And it's so important to hear a young kid speak in a team meeting, just as it is to hear a Shannon Hearn or a Luke Shuey talk as well. And so to be able to provide a platform for them to be able to speak out is something that's really important. I think that's what West Coast have been able to build over a long period of time. So they've got a really good culture there. And I think if some of their kids can step up and their older players can still have an impact, maybe not an impact that they've had in previous years, but still play a role for the side, then I think they still can be around the place in 2021.
Yep. Mate, last one before we get into the weekend's action. One of those guys you mentioned there, Shannon Hearn, it was his first season in 2006 when you were obviously in your prime. What did you see in him, sort of looking back to 2006? Did you have any sort of indication that this guy was going to become a future captain, and then now surely what looks like the first Eagle to play 300 games at the club? What were your sort of first impressions of him, and what did you see in him that might have given you a clue as to that happening?
Very humble guy, very mature, so we heard a lot about him. He was a very good cricketer. So obviously a good cricketer, good footballer, good sports person. Played some senior football as a 16-year-old.
Yeah. He never really looked young, did he?
No. He came and looked a lot older than most guys in our team at that particular time. But you're just really impressed with his work ethic and his professionalism from an early age. Yeah. And obviously had this booming kick on him, which, you know, we sort of come to expect him to always use the footy really well and kick some really big goals from outside forward 50. But just really unassuming early on. He just was one of those guys that just would just go about his business without much fanfare or any recognition, and it wasn't really sort of after that. He was just about ticking boxes and preparing himself and becoming the best player that he could be. But with his durability, because of his professionalism and the way they looked after himself, there's no surprise that he's been able to go on and have the career that he's had. He's a premiership captain. He's one of the most respected players at our football club. When I was going through, and obviously now the guys just love him because he's not about anything else but to do what's best for the football club, obviously handing the captaincy over to Luke Shuey last year was something that was very selfless of him to do. And I'm really glad that he's been able to, you know, continue playing in 2021, and would love nothing more than to see him become the first 300-game player of the West Coast Eagles.
Yeah, it's been one of the real anomalies in West Coast history. So many great players, so many long and decorated careers, and no one hitting that 300 yet. So you think that changes over the coming months. Mate, let's go back to Friday night. Tigers and Saints, I think we all thought Richmond was going to do this fairly comfortably, and in the end they did. But St Kilda, gee, you sort of wonder what might have been if they'd been able to kick straighter and just put a bit of fear into the Tigers, put a bit of scoreboard pressure, as they say, kicking 6 goals, 13. Was this a case of bad kicking's bad football for you from the Saints?
It went to script. I think we all expected the game to go the way it did. And you are right, though. In finals footy, if you're the underdogs, you need things to go your way early. And there's a mindset, I think, from the St Kilda players, especially knowing that Carlisle was out, had gone back, and Paddy Ryder as well. So deep down, you know that you're the underdogs. You know you have to be at your absolute best, and you're losing two of your most important players. So when you miss a few chances early, I mean, there's a belief that you win the game. There's no doubt about that. But things have to go your way. You need to kick a couple of from the boundary line, a couple of things to go your way, and think, oh wow, you know, this could be our day. But when you're missing some set shots early, there's that self doubt that comes in, going, well, we're up against a side that we probably don't think we can beat, and we're missing opportunities that we normally would take. So they were probably a little bit maybe overawed, probably didn't have that true belief. There was moments in the game for St Kilda that you thought they were challenging and threatening, but you can't put scoreboard pressure on in big finals. It just puts you behind the eight ball, and Richmond, I think, had something to prove, and their record in finals in the past 3 years have been outstanding. They know how to win. They know how to play in big games, and they get the game played on their terms as good as anyone in the competition. So they were, just a really hardened and a professional outfit that came to play on the weekend and responded after a disappointing first final.
Yeah, you don't get too many second chances to beat the champs, you're right. And it was sort of the opposite a little bit to what we saw Collingwood do a week prior against West Coast. You talk about converting those opportunities. You think back to Mason Cox in that first quarter, just going 3 for 3 from set shots, really sort of fueling that belief that they could pull off the upset. Shea Bolton was terrific in that first half. He's a fellow PSA boy out of Wesley College. You went to Trinity, of course. We know what Dusty Martin and Trent Cotchin and these guys can do, but for Bolton to stand up and be one of those X-factor guys, I mean, he's been doing it largely all season. How important is that for Richmond to have these guys outside of the big four or the big five, a little bit like Shane Edwards as well, who's not quite as highlight prone, but for someone like Bolton to do that, how dangerous does that make the Tigers when he's in that kind of zone?
Yeah, he's had a really good year and really impressive. He's played a lot through the midfield, but just spent a little bit more time across half forward. And, geez, he was impressive, especially in that first half with those goals. He was that really dangerous forward inside forward 50 that just looked like he couldn't do no wrong. So, again, you're right. You talk about the big guns off Richmond, but when you've got players like Bolton stepping up and he's working towards becoming an A-grader in that side. You mentioned Edwards, who's been around for such a long time, but he was brilliant. And, if those young kids can step up as well, then you've got guys like Dusty, who's been around forever. He's just continued to be a champion, not just through the season, but in finals. Bashir Hooley across halfback. Cotchin will do what Cotchin does. Rewalt is probably a little bit below his best at the moment, but I think he's got one big game in him still. And Lynch back in the side really straightened him up, and he probably could have kicked 4 or 5. So their big guns will always be around, but at the moment they're just such a consistent and even team. So they've got 22 guys playing a role. They all understand what they need to do. No one's going to be out there dominating like Dusty every week, but if you can just play Richmond football, which they do, they pride themselves on their team defence, and they're getting the job done at the moment.
Yeah, so this sets up one of the great sort of coin flip prelims that I can remember anyway. I mean, the odds have it $1.86 to $1.95. That's Port as slight favourites against the Tigers. So well set up now. Port Adelaide with the week off, the home team. They've been the minor premiers and then coming up against the champs with a rare underdog tag for finals, Richmond. I think it's only the second time that they've been underdogs with the bookies outside of that 2017 grand final against Adelaide where they came in and just destroyed the Crows. It's early in the week and we need to see changes and all the rest of it, but if you're a betting man right now, Embers, are you backing the rested home side, Port Adelaide, or do you just find it impossible to count out the champs in Richmond?
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? And obviously the bookies have got it pretty right at the moment, the fact that it's a flip of the coin. I am going to lean towards Port Adelaide. I think they've been the best team all year, and I like the fact that they are physical. They're not downhill skiers. They put a lot of pressure on. They know how to score, and I just feel like it's Port's time right now, and the fact that it's in Adelaide, they'll get, you know, 30,000+ at the game. Mm. Richmond have been enormous, and they've been big in preliminary finals. They've such a great team, and just cannot surprise you if they come and get the job done. But I just feel like now you've got this young, fresh Port Adelaide team that are just ready, and they probably remind me, Port Adelaide, a little bit about Richmond sort of 3 years ago, where they were missing finals, and if they did play a final, they got smashed, and there was a lot of pressure on them and a lot of criticism, and then it just flicked the switch like it did for Richmond in 2017. And I think this year it's the switch has flicked, and Ken Hinckley came out at the start of the season, big, bold statement saying, I was shooting for a premiership, which is just such it's a big statement to make when you're a coach. But they clearly were under pressure, and the club was under pressure, and they've been able to really respond. They've played really great football, and I'm loving the way they're going about it at the moment. So I am leaning towards Port Adelaide in this one, and I think they can beat Richmond. I think they can potentially, if they get a sniff and get going, they could even, you know, kick away from them.
Yeah, it could be a real sort of passing of the torch moment, as you allude to there. The home and away season game that these two played was a real cracker back in round 11. It was really close at three-quarter time, and then Port, again, with that home crowd and that home ground advantage, able to kick away a little bit in the final quarter. Mate, the other semi-final was the Cats and the Pies. This was a shocking no-show from Collingwood, and on the other side of the coin, methodical and just brutal from Geelong. I mean, how did you see this one, and how did you see, was it surprising to you that the Cats were allowed to control things so much? They just had that real kick mark possession game going. Collingwood just couldn't get their hands on the football, quite simply. Did it surprise you that Geelong was able to play to their strength so much?
Probably in the end, it didn't surprise me as much. I was like, when Collingwood have a big win and everyone's talking about Collingwood, could this be the year of, you know, Collingwood like Western Bulldogs had in 2016? But you just, and I've been in situations before where you somehow get yourself up for a game, and they came over to WA. They had 2 weeks to get themselves ready for this. They got smashed by West Coast early in the season at Optus Stadium, and just they threw everything at the Eagles, and they were outstanding. Like, don't get me wrong, but just to see them celebrate the way they did at the end of the game proved to me and showed me that there was so much put into this performance and so much put into this game, and it was their grand final. They came, they executed a plan, and there was nothing left, and there was nothing left in the tank. And that's what was concerning me a little bit about Pies, was, you know, after what happened last week, can they go all the way? Can they continue to do what they did? But on the other side, if Geelong had started well, and remember, Geelong were under the pump a little bit, and, you know, their finals record has been questioned. Yeah. They finished in top four. You know, could they go out in straight sets? And, you know, they were hungry and they were hard. And that first 5-10 minutes is always going to paint a bit of a picture. And Geelong just put them to the torch. Like, they just torched them. And then after that, you know, Collingwood were done. Like, there was nothing. They were shot. And so, whilst their performance against West Coast was probably one of their best in, you know, 5 years, the game after was probably one of their worst in 5 years. And on the back of my mind is that there was just nothing left for them to, nothing left in the tank.
Absolutely. Mates, on this pod last week, we spoke a bit about Patrick Dangerfield, the fact that he hasn't yet been to a grand final, and he might be just racing the clock a little bit as he gets toward the end of his career. Still plenty of good football left, but he'd want to get there. Gee, he showed that he wants to get there this season, didn't he? I mean, he was just absolutely terrific. Are you from the school of thought that you like him spending his predominant amount of time in the forward half rather than the guts like he did on Saturday night?
Well, he's a bit of LeBron James about him at the moment. He's just sort of saying, come on, fellas, you know, jump on my shoulders. I've come from Adelaide to Geelong. I know that there's a few guys here that have won premierships before, and I know the club's been very successful since 2007, but, you know, I want this to be my time, and I want you guys to come with me and win a flag, and that's exactly what he did. And I do like him forward. I do like the big gun spending time forward, but it means that your midfield group have to stand up. And Selwood, you know, I still think you know, there's something left in Selwood. He's never going to be the guy that gets more than 20 touches for you, but the 15 to 18 touches that he gets, and, you know, goal a game, which he's been kicking in recent times, he's just finding a way to just will himself in, and we know how much he loves finals football. Duncan's a really good player. They threw Simpson in the deep end last week, and I thought he started pretty well early. And so if you've got a midfield group that can win footy, then it allows Chris Scott to be able to have the luxury of sending Dangerfield forward. And I still think I like him through the midfield, but you know how dangerous he is inside forward 50, and those four goals on the weekend in a big final was big. So, I think probably 60-40 for mine, 60% midfield and 40% forward would be a good ratio.
Yeah, Mitch Duncan, another good Trinity boy, just battling danger for best on ground honours on Saturday night. So that leads us to Geelong up against Brisbane. So the rested Lions, they're at home. They're 10-0 at the Gabba this season, have not lost there. Interestingly as well, Geelong haven't lost there either. They're 4-0 at the Gabba this year. Brisbane slight favourites, $1.73 up against $2.12. Their previous meeting this year was really interesting. Brisbane won 3 of the 4 quarters and lost the game by 27 points. So Geelong just ran riot in the third term. I think they kicked 7-0. This was on a Thursday or Friday night in Sydney from memory. Back in sort of round 6 or round 7. So it's a fair while ago now. But I'm really interested in this one, the weight of expectation. There's so much expectation on Geelong and their finals record. And as I said, guys like Dangerfield trying to punch a grand final ticket for the first time. And then Brisbane, having been in the top two for much of the season, they've got a home grand final there for the taking. They're expected to win this game, albeit marginally. Who do you like to thrive under the pressure of expectation in this one?
I'm leaning towards Lions. I just think that the fact they've had the week off, and as you said, Geelong did get hold of them last time in that third quarter. But I just do think the way the Brisbane are playing at the moment, it's a fast ground, the Gabba, we know. I think conditions will play a little bit of a part in it, and obviously Brisbane will want it nice and dry and fast, and I'm sure that Geelong, if a bit of rain comes, the game's on the ground a little bit, which probably would suit Geelong a little bit more because it takes away the strengths of the Lions. But you just can't go past Brisbane at the moment. You mentioned that 10-0 record up at the Gabba. Yep. So much to play for. And their performance against Richmond a few weeks back was just a really professional, from a young group of players, they stood up. And that first half in particular, they were challenged. The Tigers threw things at them that maybe they weren't expecting, and the young boys stood up and threw it straight back. And so I think on the back of that performance up against Geelong in a prelim at the Gabba with that week off to freshen up, and I think it could be Brisbane win for mine.
So Andrew Embley picking a Port Adelaide Brisbane grand final, which would be a 2004 rematch, which would be fitting because Byron Pickett is the man presenting that Norm Smith, as we said. Mates, it's time to get into a little segment we call Over Under.
Over? Nah. Under.
Yeah, looks.
This is where I list the hypothetical lines, and you tell me if they'll go over or fall under. So I'm looking to the Brownlow first of all, which is happening on Sunday night this week, a rare Sunday night Brownlow this year. Lachie Neal, I think we all agree. Well, I haven't asked you if you agree if that is going to win, but I've gone for a Lachie Neal margin of victory by 4.5 votes. So do you think he's going to go over that, or do you think he's going to either win by less than that or not win at all? Have you got over or under?
No, I'm over. I think he's had a big year. He's a proven poll vote winner and getter, and I think he could actually just blow him away this year.
Yeah. I'm actually with you on the over. It's one of the more one-sided, and we've had some one-sided Brownlow counts in the past few years, but I think Lachie Neale wins this by a comfortable at least sort of 5-6, maybe even 7 kind of votes. The amount of games that Brisbane won, and I think fewer guys who can take votes off him as opposed to someone like a Travis Boak. The second over-under, a bit of a sort of longer career one from one of your ex-teammates in Josh Kennedy, 699.5 career goals. So I want to know if you think that's going to go over or under. So just a refresher, Josh is on 645 goals for his career. So he needs 55 to bring up the big 700. And so if we do some maths, if he plays, let's say, 22 games next year, 55 in 22 games, that's 2.5 goals a game. Do you think he gets to the 700 or do you think he falls just short, over or under?
Well, the one that I think we would be thinking of would be he'd fall short. The fact that no one really sort of thinks that he's got another 2 years in him. But yeah. I'm actually going to say he's going to get to 700.
Yeah,
I'm
going good.
To go and win here. I think he can kick 40 goals next year. So that's 2 goals a game.
Yeah.
And on the back of that, there's no reason why West Coast potentially just go, mate, you know, we'll have you there. We'll have you there for a year. He might be a backup forward. He might come in and out. Yep. Oscar Allen might, at this stage, might have stepped up and become West Coast key forward in there. But, you know, he's good enough potentially to kick 15, 20 in his last year. Yeah, so yeah. I'm going to go, he's going to kick 40 next year and then he's going to be in a position to get one more year. And if he does, I think he'll kick 700, which would be outstanding. He deserves it.
Fantastic. Thinking the multi-year extension, I like it. And the last one's a little bit of a funky one, so go with me here. So the person who gets awarded the Norm Smith medal in this year's grand final, I want to know if they have 0.5 career Brownlow medal wins as well. So basically your Brownlow medalists who might be winning the Norm Smith as well. So we're talking about Dustin Martin and Trent Cotchin from Richmond. Patrick Dangerfield and Gary Ablett from Geelong, and very, very, very most likely Lachie Neale will be a Brownlow medalist by then as well. So the Norm Smith medal winner this year, I think I've gone a bit too funky here, 0.5 career Brownlow wins. Are you taking a Brownlow medalist to win the Norm Smith or no?
I'm going to take it, and I'm going to take it on the back of Lachie Neale. Yeah, it's a... this is probably a little bit unlikely, but I'm going with Lachie Neale to win the Brownlow. I'm going with Brisbane to win the flag, and I reckon Lachie Neale will do what Dustin Martin did in 2017 and do it all. I think it's going to be it's the year of Lachie Neale and the Brisbane Lions for mine. So, that'll be my multi anyway.
it certainly has been the year for Brisbane and Queensland footy. So, as you say, Lachie Neale and the Lions taken all before them so far. So you certainly wouldn't put it past him to hold it to close out the season in that way. Embers, mate, we've got to let you go. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks so much for coming on the pod. I hope you really enjoy the final 2 weeks. As I say, it's your kind of time of year towards the back end of the finals. Hope you enjoy the rest of the footy, and we'll do this again soon.
Good on you, lads. Good speaking to you, and good stuff with the podcast. Cheers.
Thanks heaps, mate. And thank you to our listeners for your company. And thanks also to our great friends at Mazda and the Mazda BT50. It's the complete package inside and out. Drive the brand new Mazda BT50 at your Mazda dealer today. Tune in on Tuesday for the Loose Ballers podcast. And there's a 2-minute warning on Thursday. We'll see you back here for more of The Scramble next week.